Hello and welcome again to Climate Tracker Specialization in Jenna Magitang. This is the second episode of our series, Re-energizing Climate Stories in the Philippines, where we talk to Filipino journalists about climate journalism. Previously, we talked about the role of the church in climate change, especially since the Philippines is a predominantly Catholic country. If you haven't listened to that, I suggest you do. It's a very interesting conversation. But I guess this episode is going to be a little bit different. Well, because I have to put a disclaimer here, the guests are also my friends, Jonathan DeSantos and Gea Capico of Philstar.com. We actually work in different newsrooms, but have somehow been connected through the circles we run in. We talk about the relationship as editor-reporter and why mentorship is important in the journalism world today. I really hope you find our conversation inspiring. Hi, Jonathan and Gea. Welcome to this episode.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Before anything else, can you like tell our audience about who are you?
Okay. Hi, thanks. I'm Jonathan DeSantos. Right now, I'm news editor at Philstar.com. It's a news website in Manila, in the Philippines. No? I'm also chairperson of a local journalist group, the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines. I like to write about communities. I like to write about how policies affect communities. No? That's it.
I am Gea Cabico. I am a journalist at Philstar.com. So in Philstar, I write stories about environment, climate change, human rights, and the COVID-19 pandemic. So Sir Jonathan is my editor, and I like writing stories about, not really like, but I feel like I'm more drawn into writing stories about development-induced displacement, about communities and communities that are, as I like to call them, people in the periphery. Actually, it was coined by Jonathan, so there, and how communities are adapting to climate impact. So I was a former fellow of Climate Tracker. So I was first a fellow of the organization in 2020 as part of its climate journalism mentorship for young media professionals.
You've been writing environmental stories. What are the challenges of writing environmental stories in the Philippines?
I think the biggest challenge really is that, for most of us who grew up in the 90s, 2000s, environmental stories were more about cute animals or recycling plastic, which is good, which is important. But these stories tended to go into the background when compared to like more immediate issues. Of course, as time went by, we did realize that the environment actually is an important issue, and these issues should be at the forefront of our consciousness. No? In fact, at Philstar, we have started a climate and environment section. So it does, I guess, reflect a little bit on a change on how we have pivoted our focus of coverage.
And it's actually nice that you talked about the climate beat in Philstar, because it's something that we don't really see here in the Philippines, let alone in like whole of Southeast Asia. What is the reason behind that decision?
I think it's partly because of our focus on communities, no? And we've seen that, especially the communities that we cover, these are the ones that are most vulnerable to like disasters and to the effects pretty much of the climate crisis. So it would be weird for us to be covering the communities and the situation that they're in without looking into what caused these or what contributes to the threats that they face. Also, it's a little more friendly, I suppose, than writing about it in the business section, because as you know, there are some business interests that have, I guess, some interests that might have a destructive effect on the environment. So we wanted to be able to write about the climate crisis without necessarily antagonizing them.
Since Gaya is your reporter right now, are you pressured or like are you happy that you're actually a climate beat reporter and it's something that's not too common in our country?
there is pressure because there are only a few of us who do this kind of reporting, especially online, I think. But I feel like Filipino newsrooms need to change because our planet is changing. It is heating up. So I feel like the way that we approach journalism with regards to climate change should also change. So there needs to be much attention given to climate change. I think the same attention that we are giving to our coverage sa COVID pandemic. And I feel like other reporters, not only those who cover Climate Beat, or if a newsroom doesn't have a reporter covering Climate Beat or Environment Beat, I mean, if the newsroom only has a reporter covering the Environment Beat, I think that there must be collaboration within the newsroom also, that even reporting reporters covering sports, covering the business, must also write something about climate change, because climate change does not only affect the environment, but it is a cross-cutting issue. So it affects sports, housing, finance, gender insecurity.
So having said that, is there actually a conscious effort in your newsroom to put a climate lens in writing other stories aside from stories about the environment itself, Jonathan?
Perhaps not as a lens per se, but we have always emphasized covering using a human rights lens. It's hard to say that there is an intersection there. So maybe the emphasis is more on the human rights aspect. By covering that human rights aspect, we also have to consider parang the rights implications of like a heating planet or of these development policies. No? So we cannot ignore that either.
That's what I am actually doing when I'm writing about climate change stories. I write through the human rights lens, because before I was assigned to cover climate change in 2019. Jonathan says it's 2018, so we have different dates for that. So before I was assigned to cover climate change and environment, I was a human rights writer. So I think that really helped me a lot in angling my stories, approaching people.
Yeah, you've talked about Jonathan being with you since 2018. Can you tell us about your relationship as editor in journalism?
You know how we're supposed to parang train our replacements, no? In my head, no, I've had my chance to do the reporting that I want to do, which I have done, but I wasn't as successful at it. So really, as an editor, I think the job is to help bring up young journalists who can do that. And actually, no, if you look at it, parang we sort of muddled through this whole environmental reporting thing. Like, we started with trees for forest cover. I mean, because that's the basic idea that we had of the environment. And then we started seeing how things like logging affect communities. No? So basically, it's helping young reporters like Gaya tell better stories, I think. We have done that naman. I feel that I can eventually, no, leave the industry in better hands than when we got it. Ay.
Mas na pressure ka ba, Gaya?
I think he has been pushing for this for, I don't know, years. But I initially wanted to write about education. But there was this time in 2019 that he said he had this project. It's called the NewsX, something about people in the periphery. So he coined that. And he and our multimedia guy, EC, they were looking into the human cost of massive infrastructure projects of the government, such as Caliwa Dam, the Manila International Airport, New Manila International Airport in Manila Bay, and then the Nuclearic City in Tarlac. One time he approached me and said that, do I want to writes a story about future folks being displaced. So I think that was a life-changing moment for me, because I felt back then that what I was doing was very routine. It's a routine for me back then, and I was showing up for break, writing for stories. Then when I went to that field break, I felt like, oh, maybe I can do something better, and maybe this is the real purpose of journalism. It is to give, but help communities amplify their voices.
You know, this is actually surprising for me, because I actually thought you wanted to write environmental story because of your dad, who is actually very active in the environmental space.
Yeah, my dad, he was, before he became a disaster risk management guy, he worked long years as a development worker. So the reason why I really wanted to write about education back then was because my mom is a teacher. So I think my parents' occupation kind of inspires me to pursue what stories that I like.
You said your parents' occupation actually inspired you to do human rights stories and development stories. So how do they actually influence you? Have you been exposed to their occupation since you were younger?
I'll talk about my mom. So she's a public school teacher. So at a young age, she emphasized the importance of kids having access to education, because it's a basic human right, and it has the ability to change people's lives. And about my father, before he became a disaster risk reduction management practitioner, he was a development worker for years. So when I was younger, in elementary and high school, he would talk about his experience working with fisher folks, with farmers, with those who make copra. I remember one time that he went home and let us watch Al Gore's film, The Inconvenient Truth. So I think that was my first exposure to climate change. And he was also active in providing relief goods to those who were affected by typhoons. Like, I remember our family went to Quezon province that time. I think it was in Impanta, when after the villages were submerged in water. Then he would also talk about his experience in attending the climate walk in Tacloban after the land ravaged the area. So I think having heard these things and having seen the effects of disasters on communities, I think that helped me a lot. That's why I am really drawn to writing stories about communities.
Jonathan, do you actually know Gaya's background? That's why you chose her to do that story on human rights.
No, I wasn't actually. No, we met about her career goals. No. And yun nga, she wanted to write about education. But I really felt that the environment beat was underreported, and that there was, well, yun nga, that there was a need to focus on that. It wasn't because of any desire to save the world or anything like that. I just felt that there weren't enough stories about the environment, or about how changes in the environment are affecting people, no? But also, really, we were looking for a way to get out of the office, to do more field work, because I really believe that to be a better reporter, to be a better journalist, you really need to be on the ground, or to do a lot of field work. You could do research, of course, but yung best reporting would be if you're actually there. So, I really wanted to give our reporters that opportunity, partly because I didn't really get to do that as a young reporter.
Not to butter up Jonathan, but Gaya, you have been vocal that he actually is really supportive of what you want to do. So can you tell us more about that, your relationship as maybe mentor, editor?
He was more of a mentor than an editor. I think I am very lucky. If it weren't for him, I would be stuck. Like, I wouldn't have grown as a writer and as a person because he went beyond correcting grammatical errors. He went beyond just editing our copies. I think what I like the most about him is it was so easy to approach him. He would also give advice not only on how to improve my writing or what should I do more, but he would always be there whenever there are problems inside about my career or even outside that.
Can you actually reflect on your management style? Is this because it's something you've received before, or is this something that you actually wanted to receive before? That's why this is something you're giving.
And like I said, yeah, as an early career journalist, I didn't really have a lot of guidance. Like, we have a common friend from your newsroom, no? Na sobrang harsh editor siya. Like, the kind of editor who'd make fun of your copy or who'd make fun of... For example, how I walk, parang ganon. Ano yun, di ba? So really, when I became an editor, I wanted to basically be that person I didn't have when I was a younger journalist. I wanted to help give our reporters better yung opportunities that I didn't get. Yun nga, I mean, like, it's easy to think of editing as correcting copy, as correcting grammar, but that's really sobrang basic level lang. Actually, a lot of it is parang listening to people, listening to their problems and then saying, oh, it's okay, this is what we can do. In the Philippines, it's sink or swim, yung news industry, and I really don't believe that it should be that way.
And how do you think the synergy between the both of you actually helped in your crafting of climate stories?
It was a lot more collaborative when it started. But then eventually, parang ano na, like she got her groove na. She knew how to do it. Plus yung expertise on the subject, no? So I feel na she has outgrown me as an editor. Parang ganun, like she can do it on her own already. She can lead her own team. And she has been doing that naman.
And Gaya, Jonathan has also been also supportive in you joining other fellowships. Like, this is the third time you're doing a fellowship with Climate Tracker, and you also had fellowships and grants from other organizations. So can you talk about the importance of, say, support like this in your reporting?
Actually, he was the one who repeatedly pushed me to apply for grants, like the one with Climate Tracker last year. Actually, he would send sa Slack parang links of grants, opportunities, and he would say na maybe you'd like to check it out. So I would, and yeah, I think that's one of the things that I like about him, because he also wants his writers to gain more expertise on something. I've received several grants from Climate Tracker, from Earth Journalism Network, and they are really helpful because they provide, like, for example, lessons about climate policies, I mean, climate science, and how to improve your reporting on climate change and environment. And it's something that newsrooms cannot provide because we're journalism majors. I mean, I don't think there's any science guy in our newsroom. So those things, they are really helpful in improving our craft as climate journalists.
Let's talk about the story you're actually doing right now.
The story is about a project called Araw Ara. There's this barangay, it's called La Iban in Tanay Town. It is one of the 1,000 villages in the Philippines without electricity. So as the world becomes increasingly digital, children in these far-flung areas are being left behind. Project Araw Aral, it seeks to develop solar energy-powered co-studying spaces in Barangay La Iban, which is unelectrified. So our story aims to discuss how energizing schools through the use of renewable energy can help mitigate the impacts of climate crisis and as well as address educational inequality and improve the quality of life of an entire communities because Barangay Laiban, it has been a recipient of many solar powered projects. So we'd like to discuss how those projects failed and how this particular initiative, which is Project Arrow Aral, is succeeding.
Actually, also want to look at the policy aspect of it. For example, because Rizal, no, seems to be lagging in electrification, but there is also a lot of potential for renewable energy. No, for example, in Pirilia Town, naman, there is the wind farm. It's still small, I suppose. It's still starting out, although. According to studies that I've read, it has even just the existence of that wind farm there has already improved the situation for the town in terms of tourism and yung assistance from the I think it was at energy. No? So basically, what we want to look at is how NGO or these civil organization efforts and actual parang LGU policies could work together to give basically to give people of the people of Rizal better access to electricity, better access to power, while also keeping it sustainable, keeping it using renewable energy.
So why did you actually choose this project in or highlighting this project in this fellowship?
Well, okay. Partly because I'm looking at land in Rizal, no? But also Rizal is closest to Manila, but it's all ironically it's not as it should be more developed given its proximity to the capital, no? But it's not, and it's actually we have done a lot of projects in Rizal. We've done a lot of stories in Rizal, so we wanted to build on that work. It's so near the capital, but it's still not very covered as much, I think. Like a lot of attention is given to maybe Batangas or other provinces in the southern Tagalog region.
How do you think our mentors helped you in actually crafting this story?
For me, it was a lot, sobrang useful, the foundational knowledge that they shared and also the input in story development, although we weren't able to consult as much because of some logistical problems, no. But the input was really helpful in crafting our questions or basically crafting the story.
Yeah. So we weren't able to talk to Attorney Gia. We had to resort to doing online consultation because of scheduling problems. Because I had to go to Glasgow. But even before that consultation, the thematic mentoring conducted by Attorney Gia and Dean Tony, they were really helpful because as a climate reporter, I admit that my knowledge about renewable energy, I mean clean energy sources, isn't a lot. So that helped me a lot knowledge-wise.
So finally, what do you think is your end goal in doing this story? What do you expect afterwards, after you actually publish it, Jonathan?
Okay, so we've been doing a lot of, parang, we've been pivoting to more solutions journalism stories, no? So we're hoping that the story can show an example of a provincial local government unit or a municipal local government unit can provide assistance or can provide support to make an environment that is more conducive to more use of RE, and to see whether it's replicable across the Philippines or in other areas, even just in the region, no? Even in Southern Tagalog. Maybe there are other provinces looking at how they might be able to implement these projects. We also want to help yung Aral get funding, get support, so they can also help students, more children get access, no, to electricity, so they can study better, get better quality education and so hopefully better employment prospects moving forward.
Yeah, for me, I think I am aiming for this story to really highlight the importance of having access to education, because this community, it is a remote community, and thus the lead of Project Arrow Arrow shared that the students in La Iban Integrated School, I think they scored 30% in the national achievement test. So that's very low. So I am hoping that this story will inspire more groups to do projects like this, or inspire more groups to support important projects, because having access to education can change one's life and eventually change the lives of those living in the community. Yun nga, sabi nila, it takes a village to raise a child.
Thank you so much, Yondan and Gaya. I'm very excited to read the story you'll be producing. Thank you both for joining us in this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And that's it for this episode. I'm Bianna Magbitang for Climate Tracker Specials Asia. If you want to read more about how we are re-energizing climate stories in the Philippines, you can find them on our websites, climatetracker.org or climatetracker.asia. Special thanks to Oxfam Pilipinas for making this project possible. For comments, suggestions, and feedback, you can email us at podcast@climatetracker.org. Hope you can join us again next time.